patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
I'm back, baby. Look at this.
You're back. You got a nice little tan going. In my spare room where I belong.
Canadian soil. I'm excited, man. It has been too long. I'm really pumped to see you. So I'm going to start with just giving a tip of the hat your way for guiding this ship while I was away for the last month, man. You did a really good job.
Hey, you know what? We have some serious depth on our bench.
Yes, we do.
Joel, Craig, and Garth. Big kudos to them. Stepped up big time and helped carry us the last 3 weeks. So made my job.
Man, those three were just gems, buddy. And great response from everybody, too. It's so funny. Like, they all got their own fan bases kind of thing.
Yeah.
Throughout Blue Jays land. And I love it.
Here's the takeaways. This is the trajectory. I can't get my hand on camera here. Here's the plot that I've discerned from the data reading the comment section is that Garth was loved by everyone except from people in Manitoba because he claimed to be the center of Canada and Ontario is not the center of Canada.
For geographical reasons, Garth had haters.
There were some Manitobans that were quite upset with that. Craig came in hot. Everyone loved him.
And then said Slim Daddy Vladdy too much. And
he lost him with the Slim Daddy Vladdy too many times. And Joel, hey, Kami, came in very hot with his contrarian takes.
Yes.
And a lot of people were like, I'm out of here. This, you guys have lost all credibility. Bring back
and
Ben.
And then
Nicholson
he won
Smith.
Them over.
And then he won them over. Yeah. So, and then we all lost everybody yesterday when Joel and I talked about war and how it's a terrible stat. Or measurement tool, whatever the case may be. So anyways, we've lost all our subscribers, Scott. You're coming back to a clean slate.
To a clean slate. Just how
we're pushing for our first 100 subscribers. So let's go back from zero. Let's get to it.
All right. Welcome everybody to the walk off. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack, keeping things locked down while I was away. We've got a big show ahead of us. I do want to tease some interviews coming up. So we are going to release our Hagen Danner interview next week, sometime during the week. Hagen, of course, one of the front runners to be a surprise appearance and make this team out of spring training in the bullpen. 100 miles an hour. The guy's got gas. He's got just a confidence about him after coming off of this injury last season. And I think that he really is going to contribute to this team in 2023 in some way. So we'll get that out there. And then on Monday, we're going to be joined by the newly promoted Arden Zwelling of
really
Sportsnet.
Promoted?
Yes, what's Arden is now the new on the field guy with Hazel May doing all the interviews and stuff like he was in the playoffs.
Oh, very cool. Very cool tip of the cap to Arden, friend of the show.
Exactly. So Monday, Arden Zwelling, mark it on the calendar, folks.
Good timing for that one, Scott, because
agreed. Just at the start
training.
Of spring training.
Oh, this is
right?
Great. I'm excited for this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Okay, a big list of things to get to. Before we do that list, though, buddy, and I know a lot of people are talking about the Yusei Kikuchi beard.
Yeah. I saw that wasn't in your show notes. So I was going to bring it up.
A lot of people are talking about it, but no one's taking credit for it. And I think that this is a little bit of us rubbing off,
has
buddy.
To be. Has
going
to be.
Beard.
Has to. You, me, Big and Keegan bad. Matheson.
That's right. The three bearded Blue Jays, folks. Yeah. It's spreading, everybody.
It's spreading. Yeah.
Honestly, man, Kikuchi, we're not going to talk too much Kikuchi, but I do want to say that he really is, in my opinion, the biggest question mark going into this season. If Kikuchi, some crazy reason, now hear me out. I know you're going to roll your eyes and be even just like disgusted by this. But if Kikuchi somehow has a 3.5 to 4 ERA and pitches 150 to 160 innings, do you know like how crazy huge that would be for this team?
Yeah, like, crazy would, huge.
Like they would be a division champion. Dude, like
dude, if he's more than a bullpen arm this year, if he is a number five starter with an ERA in the fours, I'm going to be dancing.
I agree.
I'm so happy.
I agree. And I think that I know Shai Davidi, friend of the show, right? Big Sportsnet analyst there, one of the top guys in that Jay's umbrella of reporters. He brought up that John Schneider said, I love what I've seen out of Yusei so far. He's made some small tweaks with his arm path and spent a lot of time in the offseason working on it, as he should have been. When you finish a season with a 5.5 ERA, you go back to the drawing board, baby. But it's good to hear. I mean, what else is Schneider going to say? It is interesting that he added a curveball, something that, I mean, if you've got the likes of Hyunjin Ryu and Jose Berríos to pick their mind on a curve, I mean, you can't really get much better than that. So I really do think Yusei could be a bigger contributor than we're giving it credit for. He also could just continue to be what he was last year, which is a thorn in all of our sides. So
look, I'm I am, you know, one of our traits of the show here is our toxic positivity.
Toxic positivity.
I'm so optimistic that the bearded dragon is going to have a resurgent year. And I hope we can just get that nickname going.
Yes, the bearded dragon.
The bearded dragon. So
we're claiming Markham Madman and bearded dragon here on the walk-off.
Let it go. Let's
get into it here, because we do have a lot to talk about, man. I know that you don't feel that way, but I haven't talked Blue Jays in a month, so I can't wait to get into some of this stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what. I woke up this morning to a whole list of show notes for the first time in 3 weeks and was reminded
you were thrilled
how much prep work you do compared to me. I'm more of a roll out of bed and go, well, what do we feel? What's the vibe?
Let's see what Craig has on his mind today.
Yeah, you had me pulling up stats. You had me, hey, would you do the sixth, seventh inning splits versus the eighth, ninth for this guy and that guy? Can you get the prospect rankings for the guys that were involved in this trade? I was like, okay, we're brewing the coffee right away. We're getting to work.
Yeah, here, so well, is stuff going on. So I'm excited to talk arbitration, right? Corbin Burns.
Okay.
The Corbin Burns.
Let me pause you there, Scott, before we get to that.
Yes.
We do have to address the elephant in the room. You're back from Africa.
I am back.
3 weeks away. I know you didn't just not watch Flames games while you were
away. I didn't. I even watched a game. My wife was actually quite upset because I stayed up till 2 a.m. because our time zone differences were so screwed up. So I was up at 2 a.m. trying to watch the Flames game. Yeah.
So here's the problem with a lot of people in Africa trying to watch Calgary Flames games. And we know there's a big audience over there for it. And NordVPN can help solve your difficulties there. So
no joke, though, man. No joke. Sportsnet will not let you watch that game. There was no way I could do it without a VPN. And so
there you go. NordVPN.com/walkoff. It is their birthday 11-year anniversary for NordVPN. So normally on your birthday, you expect presents. I expected presents on my birthday a few days ago. Got several
happy
presents.
Belated, by the way, buddy.
Thank you. Yes. I was fishing. Okay. But NordVPN instead is giving away presents for celebration of their birthday. So everybody that signs up
the switcheroo, if you will,
everybody that signs up for a 2-year plan will receive an additional length of subscription time from 3 months to an extra year for free. And that is on top of the bonus month that you'll get for free if you sign up with our link, nordvpn.com/walkoff. So next time you go to Africa, NordVPN.com can keep you in touch with Blue Jays games, Calgary Flames games, maybe Raptors games if you like stupid sports like basketball. There you go. NordVPN.com/walkoff. Support us by supporting those who support us. So support our sponsors and support the show.
That is appreciated. Yes. Great read there, Adam.
I'm getting better
down,
at it.
Buddy. Yeah,
we're,
man.
We're getting there. Okay.
That's, so okay. Here are our topics. Here are our topics. We're going to talk the Corbin Burns saga and what happened with the Brewers and his arbitration hearing. We're going to talk hindsight and that the Blue Jays pretty much dodged a big Frankie Montas bullet by not going all in on him at the trade deadline last year. I know you've probably talked Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to death over the last month, buddy, but I want to get in on the action there. So we're going to talk
Slim Vladdy. Daddy Vladdy.
Yeah, don't say it. Don't you say that.
Shots.
We'll say, I'm going to give my opinion on what I think Vladdy's going to do this year. Adam Simber. Buddy, he is only going to be better in this new role that he is in now that they've brought in Eric Swanson mm-hmm. and Anthony Bass in the last 6 months, right? So we'll get into Adam Simber. Our AL East predictions with spring training beginning. Literally, guys, they're showing up right now, man. I'm loving the content, watching the boys come in to Dunedin, to the Jays complex there.
From what I've discerned, everyone is there except Alejandro Kirk, who's back at Tijuana awaiting the arrival of his new child. So,
yes, exactly. Big congrats to Kirk, by the way. So we're going to wrap up on that, and then I'm going to tell, and this is why we're doing this at the end, but I did just spend the last 3.5 weeks in Africa, so I've got some tales to tell. So I will be shedding some light on that at the end of the show here. Of course, if you have zero interest in that, perfect. We've set this show up perfectly for you, so you can just cut that off at the end.
Tune it right out.
Okay, buddy, let's get into Corbin Burnes and the lack of love showed for him by his Milwaukee Brewers. Listen, hey, arbitration
hey,
here.
Hey, check it out. I'm proud of this one. Name of this segment, arbitration. Corbin Burnes.
Hey, that's why you're the best co-host in the biz, Buzz.
Stayed up all like morning that. Working on that one. All right.
Sorry, go ahead. Pun among puns. There we go. Okay, so arbitration hearings. I mean, we talk about this all the time, man, right? They're part of the game. But I just don't feel like that's just such a blanket statement, right? Like it doesn't mean every case is equal or that they are handled or will be treated like business as usual by everyone. You know, like news came out yesterday that Corbin Burnes felt, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he felt basically completely disrespected.
He felt burned, if you will.
He felt burned, if you will. So the Brewers and Burnes were, and this is what blows my mind, man. They were only $750,000 apart.
I know.
Like it's not like the Bo and the Blue Jays arbitration numbers where it was $2.5 million, where it was 5 to 7.5, right? Where it was like 1/3 of a difference. Like we're talking a minor league contract here. We're talking the league minimum is what they were fighting over. And the Brewers did win this hearing. Okay, so the arbiter agreeing with their proposed 2023 salary of $10.01 million rather than Burnes' number of $10.75 million. So they are saving that $74,000.
I'm sorry, but also 10.01 is such a petty number to throw
isn't
out.
Isn't it? Oh, isn't my it? God.
Now you're worth more than $10 million. 10.01.
So I think way more than the number. What upset Burnes and got under his skin was how the Brewers went about it in the argument. And one of the big things that he said, and again, I'm more or less paraphrasing, but there's video of this all over the internet. You don't have to go far to find it. So basically he said that they pinned them missing the playoffs on his final few starts of the year, which, I mean, if you watch what the Brewers did at the trade deadline. I don't know how the fuck you can figure that. Like they traded literally the best reliever of the last 5 years. I don't get it, man. I just don't understand the reasoning here. Right. Like, and I know that Josh Hader struggled out of the gate with the Padres, but he was also his dominant self in the playoffs, which is what you want a pitcher like that for. And if you look back in history, Blue Jays fans have seen a deterioration similar to this in relationships because of arbitration before. And we're talking Marcus Stroman, right? Who had a great relationship with the Blue Jays early on in his career. Dude, he still has the skyline of Toronto tattooed on his abdomen, right? Like he was all in on the Blue Jays. And then he got picked apart in arbitration. And yes, again, it's really easy to say that these guys are soft. But in my opinion, if you want to maintain a good relationship with your homegrown talent, right? If you want to maintain a relationship with the guys that you're drafting and you're developing and you're building a core with, then maybe it's worth it to do what the Jays did in locking up Bo. And I think that there's huge benefits to that way beyond maybe we can still sign him. Right? Like there's dissent in the dressing room. It grows fast, especially if it has something to do with a star player like Burns or Bo, right? Like a guy with deep roots within the organization who all of a sudden feels slighted, right? That can spread. But this is the thing I wanted to bring up is I just feel like the Brewers and the Blue Jays are so polar opposite with what they're doing as organizations.
Right. Well, I do want to touch on the fact that, I mean, I don't know if you saw Bo Bichette's little interview press call. I don't know what the right word is for this.
Yes.
He's in front of the blue paper, yes. Microphones in his face. How you feeling? He seemed chipper.
Yeah.
Is that the right word? He sound perky.
Yeah.
He's happy. He's got money in the bank. It's good to see. I'm, again, toxic positivity here. Very encouraged for that relationship. Again, I'm not saying that a long-term deal, 7, 10, 15 years, is going to happen this offseason. But we've gone from a position of like 3 more years of going into arbitration, being like, hey, the reason we missed the playoffs is because Bo Bichette went 0-16 in the final series against the Yankees. He really let us down, right? From those sorts of comments to like, we just don't have to do that.
Yeah.
It's such a substantial swing in the relationship, goodwill and all that, blah, blah, blah. So that's some real positivity. Corbin Burns.
You know what I think it is, dude? I honestly believe the Milwaukee Brewers have zero intention of trying to retain Corbin Burns. In fact, I think it's very possible Burns is gone this trade deadline. And if not this trade deadline, maybe next year when he's only got 2 years left. And this is Brewers baseball 101. They never go out and lock up their big talent, right? They don't. The most money that they have spent is acquiring Christian Yelich, pretty much.
Milwaukee Brewers payroll right now, they are 19th in baseball, around $104 million.
And they're always a playoff contender. And the reason they are a playoff contender is because of shrewd business moves like this. However, I do want to say there is negative aspects to operating this way. And even if Bo Bichette walks, okay, even if Bo Bichette at the end of his new extension deal that bought out his Arbiers goes to free agency and becomes a Texas Ranger, and now the Rangers finally have those 4 shortstops they've always wanted.
Well done.
Even if he does walk, okay, I think that what it does is send a message to the rest of the players in that clubhouse that they do want to lock up their long-term talent, right? That they do want, like, this may not work out for Bo, but it may work out down the road for the Blue Jays with Ricky Tiedemann.
Right, where it's the opposite of what happened. Showed a pattern, right?
Exactly.
They lost out with Mookie Betts, and how that relationship was handled. Had no choice but to trade him away, essentially. The Bogarts.
This is where we're very
departing for the Padres, and then they had to. I don't know. Did they overpay on Devers? I don't know. I don't want to say overpay, but it felt like they really had to.
Yeah,
make that happen. Like, whether or not it's an overpay, he certainly had leverage in those negotiations.
Yes.
Right. The fan base really would have revolted
and
if he had also left. So
yeah,
they did definitely painted themselves into a pickle. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, whether or not this leads to Bo being a Blue Jay for life or not, it's encouraging for Ricky Tiedemann or even Alek Manoah's negotiations,
100%, which are going to come 100%. Sooner. So. And it's really impressive to me to watch the Blue Jays go down that route, right? Because there was all the rumors that there was dissent with Bichette and the relationship was souring. And to see them get a deal done is a big deal. I think when it comes to the Brewers, they're like, we talked about it. It was only a minor league. You know, it was a league minimum player. But they're going to use that for exactly that. This is how they continue to be perennial contenders, is that they are a shrewd small market team. And yeah, it hurts Brewers fans and they hate to watch it, but they're used to it. Brandon Woodruff is going to be traded this year almost for sure, especially if they are out of the playoffs come trade deadline.
Joel and I talked on Wednesday about the spirit of Moneyball being the like bucking the trend, the outside the box approaches, right? And how what Alex Anthopoulos is doing in Atlanta is kind of like the new Moneyball of like, get these guys in their first year. Hey, you've played 50 games. They looked great. Clearly you can hang up here. You know, here's $11 million a year for the next 25 years or, you know, whatever.
Something
absurd, and get them locked up. That may be an approach that Milwaukee is going to have to do, or not have to do, but I think Milwaukee is a prime candidate as far as teams go to adopt that approach. Like we saw the Rays kind of do it with Wander Franco.
Yeah.
Although I still think the way that contract is structured, it kind of leads to a, we'll pay you for cheap for the first 3 years and then we'll trade you off. And we're not ever going to pay the real money at the end of your contract.
The real money at the end of the contract that we've all backloaded the majority of it. But the Brewers
spending $100 million, they're not the Oakland A's. Like they do have money to spend. And if they do it in an efficient way and, you know, next year, this year, whenever they trade Corbin Burns, one of the best pitchers in baseball away, they're going to get a haul back for him.
And this trading is the away thing.
A Cy Young winner who's
like you're nailing it, dude, because I really do believe that even if this relationship is soured and even if Burns isn't the pitcher that he was last since 2017 and he has a down season, they're still going to get max value for him at the trade deadline
for sure. Someone will for sure overpay or just pay an absolute haul, and then that next wave may be the opportunity of, hey,
then
we
they
got
take
the next
that $750,000 they saved on Burns and they plug it into a guy they're calling up as a prospect. Yeah,
exactly. So, all right. Anything else to add on this Corbin Burns situation? I mean, it was cringy to watch his presser where they were asking, and he kind of just revealed like, it's business, but they didn't really have to say all that.
Yeah.
It did seem like a little bit of an excessive attack, but funny thing with the arbitration process is the arbitrator is not a baseball, like it is just a it is a
numbers guy. It's a numbers guy who's
it's a workers arbitration. So it is not you have to break it down like that, right? To someone who maybe isn't a baseball fan, doesn't appreciate the.
You know what? The last thing I will say about the Blue Jays locking up Bo Bichette is if you look at their comparable, which was probably Kyle Tucker is the closest comparable when it comes to the arbitration numbers, the gap, right? And Kyle Tucker, same thing. Astros put out $5 million, Tucker put out $7.5 million, and Tucker actually lost that arbitration hearing. So I think Bo probably would have lost that hearing, and maybe he even knew that going in, and very similar to how he left 20 plus thousand on the table last year because he didn't like the way the Blue Jays used their evaluation. It might have been almost a, I'm going to get all this back in free agency. I've just got to hold my ground. And so giving him that money up front like that really is going to improve the relationship and just the way the other Blue Jays players view this organization. But we'll leave it at that. It is a positive thing, the Blue Jays locking up Bo Bichette. Not locking him up, but extending him and buying out his arb years.
Absolutely.
Okay, so, and I will maintain, buddy, that I still think the Blue Jays should have gone out and got a starting pitcher at the trade deadline last year. But man, oh man, am I ever counting my lucky stars that they didn't go all in on Frankie Montas, buddy.
I was never high on Frankie Montas.
Too much risk. And now it's showing that's the case.
Yeah, because he was he had missed time in the middle of that season. And there was just the optimism that, well, once he's back, though, he's going to be so valuable.
Yeah.
I didn't like that from the get. Let's look at. OK, so let's just get the horse.
Let's start with the fact Frankie Montas, it has been announced in the last 48 hours that he is going to undergo shoulder surgery and probably going to miss the entirety of the season. He may come back late, but we'll see what happens there. Definitely a hit to the New York Yankees rotation. Now, of course, Yankees fans will scream from the mountaintops that it doesn't mean anything and that he sucked anyways. But it is a hit. All right. They are going to need to go deeper into their depth, even though the Montas kind of lined up as their fifth starter. It is a hit. And I know that there were a lot of Yankees fans, Adam, that were voicing, what the hell is this guy's problem? Why wouldn't he get shoulder surgery after the season? Why did it take until now to do? What an asshole. Like the Yankees medical team didn't have everything to do with this, you know, like there wasn't a bunch of Yankees guys with being like, you know what, if we can avoid surgery, let's do it. I think that that's where that came from. It is too bad it didn't work out that way for him. You got a feel for the kid, but.
I mean, it reminds me of Trevor Story.
Yeah.
Getting, what was it? Shortstop's equivalent of Tommy John, essentially. Yeah. Like,
and the timing was weird last year. We questioned it too. We're like, what the hell?
Yeah, it was really an odd spot in the offseason for that announcement. Like,
But I think it is important for fans to remember that these players aren't an island. They're not there making these decisions and calls on their own. There's literally a team of physicians and doctors working with the organization they're with to make these decisions as well as they can, right?
Look, I don't want to. Okay. Who's the reliever that we just added?
Eric Green? Swanson.
No.
Oh, yeah. Chad Green. Yeah.
Chad Green. Thank you. So with Chad Green, and this is going to tie back into Frankie Montas, okay, and Trevor Story. So with Chad Green, we're not expecting him to come back until August, like the midpoint of this season, right? Yeah. Some point over the summer. And then the expectations are low.
Yeah.
Right. It is, look, this is a guy with upside for year 2, 3, and 4, maybe.
Yeah.
If we get much out of him this year, it's like icing on the cake. Maybe there is a consideration for a Frankie Montas to go. In October, he's talking with his doctors. He's talking with his agent. He's talking with his wife. He's going, look, I can get the surgery right now. And I can probably be back throwing by August of next year.
Yeah.
But then I'm going to be like fresh off my recovery and my rehab. My numbers at the second half of next year probably aren't going to be that good. Or I could just try and see if I can do this without surgery. Worst case scenario, I show up to spring training, I throw one pitch and I go, no, I need the surgery.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I get the whole year off. I get a full 12 months to recover as opposed to 9 months. It's 3 extra months of rehab.
It is.
And recovery. So all of a sudden now the sample size for 2024 has a better chance of being impressive numbers. I'm not looking at his contract or anything right now. So I don't know how close he is to free agency, how much of a big factor it is, but
I think it's this year and next year. I think they got Montas for is the last 2 years here. I could be wrong. Maybe we'll double check that.
But I can look that up. It's a consideration, I think. And I think
it is a consideration. Although I will say, let's not let Brian Cashman completely off the hook here. I think he was feeling pressure from that fan base after losing out on Luis Castillo to the Mariners last trade deadline. And I think he may have given up a little much to get Frankie Montas, who was truly limping through the season last year.
Okay. So Frankie Montas, by the way, $7.5 million for this year. And then he's a free agent UFA.
Right. So this year, so this is his last year then. Yeah. So this hurts.
I don't know how that
basically
play
means
out
they lost all their prospects for pretty much nothing. And yeah, what were the prospects and their rankings?
He's probably not going to pitch for the Yankees again. Okay, so here's the New York sent. This is via MLB.com. New York sent 4 minor leaguers to Oakland for Montas and Trevino. So they sent Ken Waldachuk. I'm just going to read the number of these prospects because the names won't mean anything. So they sent their number 5, their number 10, their number 20, and their number 21 prospect.
And prospects, they could not work out, but so that's a pretty pretty big haul.
Let's have a look at who the Blue Jays 5, 10, 20, and 21 are, just for comparables, because I think
Adam
Blue Jays
Max,
fans
you are on
be,
your game, my dude.
Yeah,
I love
look
it.
At this. Okay, so number 5, Yosfer Zulueta, right? A lot of optimism there. Adam Macko, recently acquired, is our number 10 prospect. Number 20, CJ Van Eyck.
Friend
missed last
show.
Season with a Tommy John surgery, but there's some optimism there. He was a top 10 prospect before the surgery. And then Manuel Beltre, 18-year-old shortstop in single A.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not your number one guy, but 5 and 10 are real prospects. You know, these are
and
real guys.
And think about
that,
Blue Jays fan. So. Would you be upset seeing that haul going out for Frankie Montas, who then doesn't contribute in any way? So I do understand Yankees fans' frustration and the anger. Yeah, man. Hindsight's 2020, but glad the Blue Jays weren't in on that.
All right, let's talk Slim Daddy Vladdy. Expectations for 2023. He looks good so far in spring training. From the clips I've seen, he looks fast, agile, and accurate.
Dude, they're watching that video of him with Don Mattingly at first base. I don't know if you saw, but it gave me
your heart.
Goosebumps, man. Oh, yeah. I was just like, this is awesome. I love it. Donnie Baseball teaching Vladdy tricks of the trade. I mean, just warms your heart, right? And there are so many reasons in my mind to think that 2023 could be the year of Vladdy. And I don't just mean a good year. I mean, literally, he could have a career year. Things are lining up really well for him. And obviously, there are tweaks to his swing he's got to make. He's got to get his launch angle up a little bit. The ground ball thing was really killing him last year, despite having great numbers. The ground ball thing really hurt. But if he can do that, man, there's a few things that are going on this season. And listen, I don't think that the banning of the shift is going to help him all that much. I think it will help him a little bit. However, pitch clock, I think he's going to be a guy that pitch clock benefits more than almost any
really
guy on this team. I mean, the amount of wiggle room for pitchers on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when they're facing him at the plate is minuscule. And time matters. And so these guys being a little bit more rushed, a little bit quicker to the plate, and even just having the rhythm of a pitcher down a little bit more where they can't mess with you quite as much. I think we're going to see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. really be able to dial in on some of these guys. Some of these, let's say, slop throwers, right? The number five pitcher for the Minnesota Twins, right? You know, whoever that winds up being, you know, like, you know who I'm talking about, right? The number five pitcher on most teams, if you just give away a little bit more of their time, that's who this is going to affect, I think, the most, this pitch clock rule. And I could be putting too much into it, but I really think that speeding pitchers up is going to help him.
Okay.
Would love to hear what everyone thinks too. Go ahead and put this in the comments.
On the one hand, I think you're right. On the other hand, I don't know that it like helps him more than anybody else in particular. I would be interested to see. I'm sure this stat is tracked somewhere, and maybe later today I can look into it. But the time between pitches per player, like, do pitchers generally take longer against Vladdy than anybody else? Like, because if that's the case, then I hear you, right? Like, if guys are taking an absorbent amount of time against Vladdy and now they won't be able to, then I think, sure. But if he's just right in the middle anyways, I don't think that extra help. I don't know if there's anything that makes it extra helpful to him specifically.
We'll have to look if there's this stat.
You know what? We have a whole community. Someone that's going to be critical of our math skills or our spelling mistakes. One of you snobby kids, look that up and let us know. Okay. Do our homework for us, would you?
Yeah. I mean, the shortened right field wall is bound to help him as well. It's just going to.
I mean, yeah, but it's also going to help Bo, and it's.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic too. You said career year. So I'm looking at 2021 season.
I just
48 home runs. I think
it's going to be a career year.
OPS plus of 167. Yes. MVP second in voting. Of course, we remember lost to Shohei Ohtani. That's a big ass.
Big ass.
Saying career year.
It's a with big a
311 ass. Batting average. Like he was chasing a triple crown until like, the final 2 weeks of the season there. Oof, career year is that's a big one.
Let's talk a little bit of projections with Brandon Belt in the lineup there. I honestly think this is going to be such a big year for Vladdy.
All right.
And well, if it's not, let's never bring this up again.
I think that this is going to be a big year for Vladdy relative to last year. I don't know if it's going to be big relative to the 2021 season. I don't think that I've talked with my brother on this and he thinks 2021 may be the best Vlad we ever see in his career. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at 48 home runs and a batting average well over 300, I mean, that's a career year. Any
for almost
Hall of Famer would be thrilled to have that be their best year. I don't think that that's the best we will ever see. I'm just not 100% confident of when the better season will come. I mean, he's 23, 24 years old right now, so there's lots of time for him to get into his prime. Like he's not even there yet. I do think the offense for the Blue Jays is going to be up this year. I know that we, you know, seeing the departure of Teoscar and Lourdes and replacing with like the defensive skills of Kevin Kiermaier. I know Joel is way down on this team offensively.
Mm-hmm.
I think this team scores more runs than it did last year. Last year was 800 runs scored.
Mm-hmm.
I think, don't quote me on that. I looked that up a couple weeks ago. I think we're better this year. I think all of baseball, the offense goes up because of the rule changes. So that's a little bit of a cheat. But I think relative to the rest of baseball, the Blue Jays improve more offensively than the rule changes affect anybody else. I love the additions.
All these rule changes for offense and watch them use a dead ball.
Yeah, right.
Watch them do the most baseball MLB thing they could possibly do. Yeah,
pretty much. Okay, so Vladdy, let's talk expectations for him specifically. Home runs. You think career year? You think he pushes 50 this year?
I think he hits 50. I think 5-0 is where he hits.
I love that.
I think 5-0 is where he hits. I mean, obviously, I will settle for 40, Adam. I'm not a greedy little piggy. I will gladly take 40 home runs from Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but I do think that it's going to be a substantial increase from the 32 we saw last year.
All right. Well, I'm with you. I'm going with in the 40s. For home runs, I think like mid 40s, like 43 to 47 kind of a range. Yeah, maybe 44 is more mid. I don't know about 50. Be interesting. There's just so many different factors.
I'm stepping out on a ledge saying 50.
I love it.
I'm well aware.
I love it. I'm taking the very tepid approach. So I step out on that ledge, my friend.
There were only two guys who hit 50 home runs last year. So, and Vladdy led the league in home runs with 48 only 2 years ago. So there was nobody hit 50. 50 is substantial. 50 is a big deal.
40 is a big deal.
40 is a big deal.
50 is insane.
30 is a pretty big deal. Like, let's be
real. I'd be happy if I hit 30. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I'd be happy if you hit 30 too, bud.
All right. Batting average. He hit 311 in his career year, 274 last year. 284 is the career average.
I think 310. I think he'll
310.
Be
310.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe 305. Like he'll be above 300 in my prediction.
I think he flirts with 300 most of the season, but I think by the end of the year, the number's around like 290, 295, and I'm still going to be thrilled with that.
Yeah, me too. I would be too. I do think he is going to have a big OPS this year. I think it will. I mean, if he's going to hit 50 bombs in my predictions, it is going to help. I think he's over 1,000 there. And I think that, he flirts with 1,000 most the season and then does finish just above it. But,
do you know what OPS plus stands for?
Yeah. The average.
Right? Like just like read the words as if it wasn't abbreviated.
OPS.
It's on base percentage plus slugging plus. That's so dumb. So dumb. Joel and I realized that on Wednesday. And I just,
that's really funny.
I hate how dumb that is. On base plus slugging plus. All right. I think OPS goes up around 900 again, which I think is a phenomenal season. Yes,
obviously. Like, I'm, yeah. I'm literally predicting Vladdy will be an MVP candidate is what I'm doing here.
I agree. I'm with you there. I don't know. Top five in voting for MVP is kind of the season I'm predicting.
Hey,
substantially improved from last year, but I don't think we're ever seeing the MLB network go, well, here's Vladdy, and we're comparing him to Shohei and Aaron Judge and going, well, here's the argument for Vladdy. I think he's going to be a second tier in that discussion. But again, still, I mean, he was 16th in MVP voting last year. I think we're talking top five this year. So very good season. I'm expecting big steps. Okay, stolen bases. This is an interesting one.
Yes.
8 stolen bases last year, 4 the year before.
I'm predicting new rules. So let's just say, in my opinion, I think the Blue Jays are going to be very aggressive on the base path. We did watch them step up their amount of stolen base attempts when John Schneider took over from Charlie Montoyo. We did not see an increase in the number of stolen bases went up, but the percentage of successful stolen bases didn't go up. So they were hung up to dry quite often on the base path. We did see them make some bonehead plays on the base path. And yes, probably more than their fair share was attributed to Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez. So addition by subtraction, maybe. But we also saw bonehead moves out of Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So we will see what another year of seasoning does to them. I'm going to predict the Vladdy steals between 10 and 15 bases. I think that he is going to be more aggressive on the base path. I think that that extra couple inches on both end is going to increase the number of times he is successful. I do hope and pray, Adam, that him stealing 15 bases doesn't mean that he's going to be caught 15 times. You know, like I hope that there is a little bit more strategy to their running game this year. And I think that guys like Kevin Kiermaier and Dalton Varsho is going to help with that. We'll see.
I think 10 for Vladdy.
Okay.
On the one hand, bigger bases, new pickoff rules should increase base stealing across the board. Like league-wide numbers should be up, generally speaking. I also think that there is from a health and injury standpoint, a reason to like rein back on him a little bit. And I think he is a green light guy. He is like, I see my opportunity and he wants it. And I love that about him. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he's like the one guy on the team, maybe Springer too, where we're like, hey, that stolen base is nice, but we're up 3 runs. We don't really need it right now. We need you healthy for the next 3 weeks, not nursing a broken thumb, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think Mike Trout could be like a 50 stolen base guy. I think he doesn't steal the way he should for that same reason.
Yes, right? So, I would agree. But can you rein Vladdy in? I don't know. We'll see. I agree with you, though. Okay, let's get into the bullpen here, because I did wish to talk Adam Simber, who, in my opinion, is going to benefit greatly from being used in a different role this season than he was the last couple of years of being acquired. Number one, I want to give a shout out to friend of the show, Chris Black, one of truly the best follows on Blue Jays Twitter, at Down to Black.
You sent me this thread. Twitter thread. You always do. You send it to me on Facebook Messenger. I read it. It's usually a tweet. It's interesting. It's a stat. It's a quote. It's a soundbite. Something worth pulling up. I was not expecting this. This is a big threat. Very interesting read. I only got a chance to skim it as I did my show notes here.
I'm going to link to this in the
show notes.
Thank you.
And I encourage everybody to check it out. It's not going to be fun for us to just read these graphs and these charts and describe the 40 videos and the overlays. It is a very thorough
breakdown of Adam Zimmer. And it is very much worth the 15 minutes or so it's going to take you to have a look.
Basically,
anybody
what
who's into the baseball, the deep dive analytics and stuff is going to enjoy that. It's very thorough.
And if you're into deep dive analytics and you're not already following Chris on Twitter, do it, because he is, again, one of the best follows on Blue Jays Twitter. So basically what this thread gets, the crux of it is Adam Zimmer is an above average reliever and a weapon when used properly. He's got numbers up there with the best in the league when it comes to chase above rates, and the amount of soft contact that he induces is literally and truly elite. His numbers are great. He's got a funky delivery, and the way that his pitches play off each other, and this is what Chris kind of highlights here, is that he is so deceptive because his sinker and his slider, and if you look at the overlay, it is absolutely mind-blowing because it looks the exact same. Like, you cannot tell the difference in that delivery. And let me tell you, the sinker and the slider are two very different pitches. And if all you can do as a hitter and go up there and pick one and guess, makes the pitcher pretty darn deadly. I know you've got his numbers up here, Adam. I'll let you get into that over the last couple of years here of Adam Zimmer.
Well, we're going to look at his numbers with Toronto specifically, and we'll start there. 2 years
and maybe before you start, we will bring up the fact that with Anthony Bass being added at the trade deadline last year, with Eric Swanson being brought in, both high leverage guys, eighth inning guys, ninth inning guys, we're going to see Adam Zimmer pushed into a sixth and a seventh inning role more often. And so I think that's important to keep in mind as Adam's going through the numbers, because obviously his numbers increase when he isn't in that eighth inning. Go ahead, Adam.
Okay. So broadly speaking, in the year and a half with Toronto, I love what I see for these numbers here. ERA 2.42, ERA, not the best measurement of a reliever, but WHIP, a better measurement. Very nice whip, 1.065. Opponent batting average. Now I've lost it. So let's not worry about that for in this moment. Very good in his time in Toronto. But yes, if we look at usage, I guess let's call it replacing the starter.
Yes.
He is so much more effective than being used as a setup man. So let's look at his numbers from 6 and 7 versus 8 and 9. Okay. The ninth inning is a little deceptive. So I want to address this right off the start. His numbers in the ninth inning are off the charts good. But that's because we have Jordan Romano as our like actual closer. So anytime Zimmer came in the ninth inning, and he did it 13 times for a total of 11. Innings pitched last season, it was only ever in a blowout one way or the other.
Yeah.
Right. So we either have a 7-run lead or we're down by 7. Either way, both teams are just like, let's get out of here kind of a mentality. So
another thing that people don't give credit to Zimmer for is his rubber arm. And that's why he's out in those type of situations. He led the Blue Jays bullpen in innings pitched last year.
Good point.
So he's going to be a workhorse back there.
So in the ninth inning, ERA zero earned runs across the 13 games he appeared in the ninth inning. Batting average 1.84 and an OPS of 4.42 and a WHIP of 0.63, which is absurd. So
it is absurd.
Which I think highlights a point that I had when Joel and I were talking WAR on Wednesday. A lot of we got roasted in the comments, and probably rightfully so. The numbers don't lie, and you guys are idiots when it comes to math. And it's like, okay, sure. But also, there's nuances in context that, just pretending that, WAR is the be-all, end-all is, kind of absurd. And I think Adam Zimmer's numbers in the ninth inning look phenomenal.
Yeah.
But
doesn't make him a closer.
It doesn't. You don't look at his numbers and go, well, he should be closing games for us. This is something that a lot of those advanced metrics aren't going to, I'm probably going to be wrong. People are like, no, actually they do account for close games and high leverage situations, you freaking knob. So I don't know. I should just stop talking advanced metrics. I'm a bozo. I shouldn't even be talking baseball, let's be honest. Okay, let's talk his numbers in the eighth inning compared to the sixth and seventh, okay? In the eighth inning, his whip is 1.279. Not bad. But his whip in the sixth and seventh inning combined is 1.078. 200 much points better. Lower. Substantially yeah. better. His OPS in the eighth inning compared to the sixth and seventh goes from 708 to 668. 40 points better. Incredible. Batting average for opponents in the eighth inning, 275. In the sixth and seventh, 238. Pretty close to 40 points lower there as well. Substantially better in the sixth and seventh inning when he is coming in again, replacing an Alek Manoah, replacing a Kevin Gausman. They've just, you know, you've been seeing Alek Manoah, the bulldog out there for six innings, and now comes and in the gimmick Adam of Simber. Adam Simber. And I hate even calling it a gimmick because it feels derogatory.
A funky delivery, I think, is a sure. The politically correct way of saying sure. that. Yes. Sure. But it's true, though. Like, when you're looking at a guy like Kevin Gausman and his splitter and his delivery, and then you get a sidearmer like Adam Simber, who the you ball can't coming even up tell
at
the,
you.
A ball coming up and you can't tell the difference between a sinker and a slider, and you're just like, what are we doing here?
So I don't know. If he is exclusively a sixth and seventh inning guy, I think Jays fans are going to be thrilled with Adam Simber.
And listen, Adam Simber still, you read his ninth or his eighth inning numbers. They're still decent numbers. Like, they're still good numbers, but he is substantially better when he's facing the bottom of the order rather than the middle of the order. And that only goes to stem to reason. And there is a reason why guys like Jordan Romano are just built a little differently. Ninth inning guys, this is something that Joe Siddle talked about with us, was that when it comes to relievers, it's easy to look at the numbers and be like, that's a closer, but not everyone has that mentality to do it, right? Yeah. It's a high leverage situation. It's a high pressure situation. Not everyone is built equally. And that's why we've seen Romano thrive in that scenario.
Love it.
Okay, let's move on to our last baseball topic of the show here. Our AL East predictions. We're watching everyone reporting to spring training baseball right around the corner. I'm so darn excited. Frick, there's going to be broadcasted Blue Jays spring training games as early as next week, everybody. Very exciting stuff. So Adam and I are going to give our AL East predictions, write it all down. Obviously, if there's anyone you should be taking their word to the bank, it's us two. That's bozos, us, right? Course. Yes. do you want to start or do you want me to start here?
Mine's going to be pretty boring, so I guess I'll start.
Okay.
I do have the Yankees winning the division. I'm probably just trying to not jinx the Blue Jays when I say that.
Mm-hmm.
I got the Yankees. They're going to be a 100-ish win team again this year. I think the Blue Jays are nipping at the heels a lot later into the season, like maybe right up to the final series of the year.
Yeah.
But I would say Yankees get the division. Blue Jays get that first wild card. Beyond that, I mean, I'm down on the Rays this year. I don't know why, but I am. I don't have the Rays making the playoffs, but I still think they finish third in the division. And then the Orioles, I think, do take a step back relative to last year. I think they overachieved. I think the future is bright in Baltimore. But yes. I do think there is a regression this year. I think maybe a below 500 team even. And then yeah. The Red Sox are disgusting.
Okay, so I'm pretty boring on my end too here. I did want to really quickly touch on the amount of 100 wins for the Yankees predictions out there. And I do want to state 162 games. 100 wins is tough, man. It is really tough. We watched the Yankees in the first half of last year literally put up historic win numbers, and they didn't win 100 games last year. So I've got the Yankees winning the division, but I've got it very close. I've got the Yankees winning 97 games, losing 65. I think the Blue Jays finish second with 93 wins, I think they do take another slight step forward from the 92 wins last year. And I think they finished second in that top wildcard spot, 69 losses. 69, dude. I've got the Rays. Everyone's down on the Rays this year. I'm not. I think that they're going to be in the wild card. I think that they win 89 games. I think that they are not as good of a team as the Blue Jays. And I think that expecting Shane McClanahan to come back from Tommy John surgery and Tyler Glasnow to come back from Tommy John surgery and be the Tyler Glasnow we saw in 2021 is asking a lot of the dude. So I think that's one of the big reasons. I think Glasnow will be dominant, but I think it will be closer to the end of the season when we see him shine. I think the Sox are a below 500 team, but I think they do finish above the Orioles. I think they'll be 79-83. And I think the O's take a step back and are 75-87. I think the O's could be a 500 team. Well, I just feel like their starting pitching has taken a step back from last season. And I think putting the amount of pressure on Gunnar Henderson as a 21-year-old shortstop, you're playing with fire, man. And the kid is going to be a superstar. He's an extreme talent. Adley Rutschman, same thing. I mean, people are predicting him to be the best catcher in baseball. And if he takes a step back from last year, he's only half a season into his big league career, so it's not impossible for him to see some struggles. The Orioles are going to struggle with him.
Fair enough. Gunnar Henderson versus Bo Bichette, who has more errors in 2023?
I think Gunnar Henderson will.
There you go. I'm with you.
Would love to hear everybody's AL East predictions in the comments, by the way, who you think. I would love to see some surprise predictions out there. I know I was reading some on Twitter where, you know, there's folks out there going all in on the O's, you know, being third or second in the division, which I think is a little wild. But I love crazy predictions and hot takes. So let's see it, everybody. All right. We're going to call it there unless you would like to hear some of my stories from the last 3.5 weeks in Africa. Otherwise, all the best. Thanks so much for all the support, everybody. Love the walk-off community so much, and I'm so happy to be back talking baseball. Man, did I miss this.
All right, let's talk Belf's adventures.
All right. I'm excited to kind of go down my trip with you, buddy. Like,
Let's
I'm gonna start with the wedding day. So we landed in Windhoek, Namibia. Windhoek is the capital city of Namibia. For those who don't know, it's a little bit north of South Africa on the border with South Africa and Botswana. And there's about 2 million people there. So super unpopulated. Like we were the capital city had 500,000 people. Like
Windhoek, capital city of Namibia. For anybody watching who's in on our trivia night at the end of the month, this is going to be a question. Okay. You're going to be like, this does not relate to Moneyball. This is just a bonus for
this
the,
is a bonus
the real
question.
Fans, the diehards of the walk. Yeah. So you're going to get a free point. Windhoek, capital city of Namibia. That's question 30 trivia night this week or this month.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Scott.
So we rented a vehicle and we drove up through Etosha National Park, which is where all the safari and animals. If you were on my Instagram at all, I was posting a little bit there, but saw some really cool stuff. Cheetah, lions, giraffes.
I like that picture of the hippo.
Oh, man, that hippo was so crazy. Anyways, hippos are wild, man. Like, they don't seem like they should exist. Like, they seem like a made-up animal. Like, even as I'm looking at them, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Right? Like, just a
I always
big,
love
fat
the videos of a hippo eating a watermelon, and it's just, like, crushing it like a grape.
Crush it. Love it, yeah. And then we got to the wedding day where we were staying at Vingerklip in Damaraland, in Namibia, and basically it's like a desert or desertous small shrubs and stuff, and then these huge hills that are kind of platforms almost, I guess, like plateaus. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful, and where we got married was it was called Vingerklip, which is Germany was who colonized Namibia way back in the day, so there's a bunch of German stuff there, and it's Finger Rock in German, and it's just this big standing rock, and it's mm-hmm. beautiful and it's cool. So the whole plan was we're going to go up to the base of it and get married there, and that's exactly what we did. But the night before, buddy, so this is a little bit of a mishap of the wedding tale. Okay, so the night before I was doing like any good groom would do, right? my brother and I, we were, and Taylor, my wife, were having some beers, and they even had wings they made for us that night, and like, you know, go to bed early because it gets so hot there that we had to go and get to the Rock by about 9. So I didn't see Taylor the morning of, like, we did breakfast at 6 and then she went to get her dress on. So I couldn't see her stuff. We're supposed to meet at the Rock at 9. So of course I'm there at 9. She shows up an hour later, buddy. And
an hour?
Even as it was happening, I'm like, this is the most freaking wife thing she has done. Mm-hmm. Like, this is my girl to a T, right? Like what I should have said is we got to be there at 8 and then she would have showed up at 9, but so I'm waiting in the, they had set up a coffee station for us.
There's probably no cell service at Finger Rock either. So she can't text you and be like, I'm on my way. You don't know if she's on a flight back home or what.
And it's hot, buddy. And I'm in my wedding suit and like, I'm just sweating. I'm looking the best that I possibly can look, you know, like I'm working with limited skills here, but I, you know, I was at my peak.
Amazing.
Anyways, 9:30 rolls around and buddy, the wings, the beer, the coffee, the nerves. There were some things brewing within old Belf here that had to be taken care of. And like my brother made the trip with us. He was the one who kind of ordained it and did the speech and everything. But he was very helpful at this moment because I'm like, buddy, I don't know what to do. There's no way that I can wait 2.5 hours through the ceremony and the pictures and we were going to climb up to the Rock and get pictures like right up to, I'm like, I can't do this like this. So he went to the vehicle and he's like, buddy, I found some toilet paper. So
hero.
In my wedding suit, and he'd scouted out like just down the hill a little bit, there was this tree. So I was able to go behind this tree, buddy. And it was perfect because I was able to like hang off of it a little bit so that I made sure, you know, not to make any sort of mess of my wedding suit. Dude, it gets way worse. Okay. Oh, so I'm hanging off this tree doing my business. And all of a sudden up at the top of the Rock, I make eye contact with this like Asian dude climbing up the hill. And he just looks at me and buddy, like I'm literally, listen, you cannot look at someone in the eyes while you shit and expect for the relationship or anything like that to be anything but descent, right? Like I don't know why this is what I'm thinking of right now, but like, I remember my mother-in-law, now mother-in-law, we were at her place and her brother was living in her basement at the time. And he had this big Doberman pincher. And this Doberman pincher hated the cat and the cat was scared to death of it, stayed out of its way. The cat's laying on the sill of the garden. And this dog just starts shitting, looking at this cat right in the eyes, man. And the cat lost it, literally, like chased at it. The dog ran away. Like even in the animal kingdom, this is completely unacceptable. You cannot make eye contact and take a poop. Like it's just the most insulting thing. And literally I'm finishing up. I'm like freaking out because I'm looking at this guy in the eyes and I'm like, and then I hear my brother, oh my God, they're coming.
No way. Oh
so now
God.
I'm like rushing to finish up and I managed to finish up. Everything's great. I get up there. My brother, you know, my wife pulls up here and I hadn't seen her in her dress yet. And she gets out of the vehicle and man, it was just like magic. She looks so freaking pretty and so gorgeous. And like my brother Chet, like did the ceremony type of stuff. And man, he just nailed it so much. It was so beautiful. And he's literally giving the speech, talking about me. And he starts crying and then I start crying and my wife starts crying. And then buddy, this Asian dude walks back behind, literally sees me and he starts pointing at me and he's yelling. We don't know what he's yelling. Of course, the photographer's losing his mind, right? He's like, what the hell? And he's yelling at the guy, show some respect. There's a wedding going on. And like, nobody knew what was going on. I knew, man. I knew he was the Doberman pincher right there. Or I was the Doberman pincher. He was the cat. Like it was just like, you cannot do what I just did to the man and not expect a reaction.
Oh my God.
Anyways. So that's the wedding story. Things went great after that. And we got some amazing pictures and it was just magic. And then, my brother flew home after that. And then we carried on with the honeymoon. We went to Cape Town. in South Africa. For those who have never been to South Africa, man, like, did it ever make me appreciate being Canadian and the luck of the birth lottery that we win here in Canada, being born here? Like, it is wild. Like, listen, South Africa is amazing and incredible, and the culture and the people and everything like that. But the safety is scary, and like, everything there is surrounded by these huge, like, everything. Everything has huge fences, electric wiring along the top. There's spikes. Every door has a gate on it, a locking gate. Every window has bars, like, everywhere. And we're talking even the poorest communities where it's just like, because they are quite impoverished. It's sad. Like, they're just shacks. And even these shacks, man, anyways, the amount of safety you feel in Canada, buddy, like, it is just
easy to take for granted, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. We went to Botswana too, which was really cool. We rented a 4x4. It was 122 kilometers to where we were going, and it took us 4.5 hours to get there.
Wow.
Buddy, my wife Taylor, like, the Alberta girl in her came out, man. Like, we were 4x4 and through these giant mud puddles, and this, like, we just about got stuck a couple times where she's just rocking it back and forth and like mud spinning everywhere. She's just like in her glory, right? I'm like, ah, like, don't get me dirty. She's like, let's go.
Oh, that's great.
Anyways. I can talk this shit forever, but honestly, it was just such a great trip. And anyone who's still listening here, for the 10 of you or whatever, there you go. Thanks for staying tuned there. But
well, we got lots of comments congratulating you on your wedding and getting that done. So
I was pretty blown away. So thanks again to everyone who reached out. By the way, I know he's still listening, Ian. I came home yesterday and Ian had sent a package for us. So there's a couple cards. We're doing Fort McMurray together on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So I've got your card package I'll bring. But awesome. So a shout out to Ian. Thank you so much, brother. It was pretty darn cool. We've got some pretty cool cards, buddy. I won't spoil the surprise.
Don't spoil it. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, good talking to you. Welcome back.
Man. Super excited to be back.
We've got Arden's Welling this Monday. I know you touched on that. We'll just wrap up with that as well. So get your questions in for him as well. Of course, first come, first serve on the Patreon. Not first come, first serve. Priority seating.
Yes, priority seating
for the Patreon questions there. There is a
post we will still try and get to as many Twitter and Discord and all that stuff too, obviously.
Of course. Yeah. And then Long Toss next Sunday. We're back.
Yes.
For Long Toss. So be a spring training edition of Long Toss. And good to see you. We'll see you Monday. I miss you.
Cheers, everybody.
You're back and I'm happy to see you. All right. Cheers, everybody. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday. Thanks for listening.